everyone. Thank you for tuning in to the Postmodern Realities podcast, brought to you by the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. I'm Melanie Cogdill, managing editor of the Christian Research Journal. It's May 2021, and you're listening to episode 235, which is a conversation about the Bible's teaching on clothing and the gender binary. Today's guest is the Reverend Matthew M. Kennedy, who is the rector, aka senior pastor, of the Church of the Good Shepherd in Binghamton, New York. Matt has written an online exclusive feature article for the Christian Research Journal, and his article is called, "Does the Bible Teach Clothes Are Dictated by Gender? Cross-Dressing and the Gender Binary?" Now, normally our online exclusive articles are only available to our subscribers, but we want everyone to get a taste of some of our content. So this particular article for this episode can be read for free at our website, equip.org. Matt, it's good to have you on.
And it's great to be here.
Well, as I mentioned, this is going to be a very provocative topic because the idea of clothing is a concern to many Christians, specifically how Christians should dress. And, you know, it could go anywhere from what's appropriate that someone should wear to church or not wear to church. There's debates about that. And specifically also modesty issues, but we're not going to be dealing with those kinds of issues in this conversation. I will say to our listeners, 5 years ago, on episode number 8 of this podcast, I did have a discussion about modesty, and the episode is called Modesty, Objectivism, and Human Value. And if you are a newer listener or you haven't been listening all the way from the beginning, you could go back and listen to that if you have questions about the issue of modesty in clothing. Now, this is also not a question about unisex clothing, you know, t-shirts that could be for men or women, or drag, which is a specific kind of way in which people in the LGBTQ community, men have dressed up as women. So it's not going to be covering that. So one thing I just want to just kind of preface for some of our listeners that might not be as familiar with some of these issues that we're going to talk about is that right now in culture, there's a big, huge issue regarding gender. And in this title, there is gender binary. So what is that? So one thing that people, specifically, I would say in the LGBT community, as well as Christians who are affirming of that community and would not agree with a biblical definition of sexuality and gender, is they would say that gender is not anatomy. And so it's very harmful in their opinion that your biological sex determines your gender identity because they see it as two different things. So they feel that gender has to do with internally what your sense of self is, what you think, and it is different than the biological sex that was assigned to somebody at birth. And then how that impacts this issue is they would say gender identity also impacts your expression of who you are. So how you present yourself to the world, and that includes expression in how you dress. So before we talk about this particular issue in terms of, does the Bible, first of all, have any admonitions or instructions about how men and women should dress? And what we could wear in terms of can men wear women's clothing culturally? And how do we separate those things? Is it cultural? So that doesn't really necessarily apply because there were different cultural standards at different times in different places. But before I ask Matt some questions about that, I want to go all the way back just to kind of a basic so that we can just start there. What would be the role of clothing for the Christian, you know, just thinking about some of the bigger issues I just said, like, you know, modesty and all those kinds of things, what we should wear to church. Should Christians even care about what they wear?
Yes. I think clothing is a positive thing. We should have a positive view of clothing. I mean, God is the one who made the first articles of human clothing. If you remember in Genesis chapter 3, after the fall, He clothed the man and the woman in the skins of the animal. We don't know what animal it was that he sacrificed for the purpose of covering their flesh. And that, of course, is typological, that points forward to the clothing of the righteousness of Christ that we receive when we come to faith in him. So just in a spiritual level, clothing is an important topic. And because I think God was the first one to make clothing for us after the fall, I suppose we try to clothe ourselves, but that didn't work out so well. But God did give us clothing. And I think that gives the Christian, should consider what he or she wears as a reflection of God, as a reflection of who God made us to be. I think it's important then to care about your clothing, to present yourself as looking appropriate. I don't think that it should be something that we don't think about at all. I think that it's something that the Christian should take some thought about. I want to present myself as someone who cares about my body and who clothes my body because God made my body the way that it is. And I want to adorn it in a way that would glorify him and call attention to the goodness of the body itself.
Well, in your article, you start out by talking about some particular Christian views about clothing, particularly those in the independent fundamentalist Baptist kind of groups, and that could also be some Pentecostal groups as well. They basically focus on clothing, particularly for women, that they believe the Bible prohibits women, for example, wearing men's clothing, and that would be pants, and also for women not to have short hair. So what do some of these groups, we'll call them IFB, it stands for Independent Fundamentalist Baptists, and other similar kinds of Christian groups, fundamentalist groups, what do they teach specifically about clothing?
They have a very defined view of what a woman should wear and what a man should wear, how a woman's hair should be and how a man should be. So within the IFB in general, women should never cut their hair. They should put it up or arrange it in a certain way that is not annoying, but you should never cut it. Men, there's a standards for how long your hair can be. Some churches have regulations about how far down your sideburns go. And with dress, women wear skirts. And in many churches, there's a specified length that it needs to go below the knee, usually some further down. And the man should, of course, wear some kind of pants. And those are what the IFB would consider appropriate male dress and female dress. And to transgress that, it's not only inappropriate within these contexts, it's actually, they would consider it a sin. You violated God's law. And so in the beginning of the article, I was mentioning a Twitter account called IFB Preachers. And whoever it is behind the IFB Preachers is not a friend of the Independent Fundamentalist Baptist. He finds these clips of sermons in which IFB preachers are generally speaking about, what you should wear, how you should cut your hair. And if it's in any way representative, it seems like there's a lot of time spent within the IFB context on clothing. That seems to be a major doctrinal issue for them. And I think one aspect of that is fundamentalists, and I'm not using that term pejoratively, they, Independent Fundamentalist Baptists, they take that name with pride, but they pride themselves on their separation from, their distance from the culture. And this is one more marker of that they dress differently, and that also signifies their having come out from among them. They're being separate and holy to the Lord.
Well, I do want to ask you about specific Bible passages, because those are, if any of us have friends in these groups, they would specifically cite these passages. One is Deuteronomy 22:5, and I'll just quote it. It says, "A woman shall not wear a man's garment, nor shall a man put on a woman's cloak, for whoever does these things is an abomination to the Lord your God." So wouldn't that particular admonition from the Old Testament back up their teaching, because it's specifically saying men and women should not wear garments that are for the other gender?
That's a fascinating text. And I think you're right. I think that's what they would turn to. That's a primary text I believe they would turn to say, well, look, this is why a woman can't wear pants, for example. A woman who's wearing pants is wearing a man's garment, and that's an abomination to the Lord. But the text itself is not specific. It says, a woman shall not wear a man's garment, nor shall a man put on a woman's cloak. That doesn't tell us what a woman's cloak is or what a man's garment is. And I think that's intentional. I think God inspired, breathed out that text so that it could be applied across culture, across different cultures, and throughout time, so that 21st century American man and woman could apply it in his or her time, and the third, fourth century person could do the same thing wherever he or she lives. It is intended to be a transcendent teaching. And I think the mistake that the Independent Fundamentalist Baptists make is they take a particular application of Deuteronomy 22:5 that may have fit a particular time. I think if you maybe go back 100 years ago, maybe a woman purposely wearing pants would be seen as putting on a man's garment. They've taken a particular application of that text at a particular time and elevated that particular application to the level of God's law. It's really the same move that the Pharisees made in Jesus' day. What they would do is they would say, okay, well, how do we apply the law against work on the Sabbath? And they say, oh, well, you know what? Harvesting is work, so let's not harvest anything. And if someone picks a kernel of grain from a stalk on the Sabbath, that's kind of harvesting, so that's work. And so therefore, you're breaking the law of God if you cut that stalk of grain off. But when you go back to the scriptures again, it just says don't work. It doesn't say don't take a kernel of grain off a wheat stalk if you're hungry. The legalistic move is always to take a specific application that might be relevant at a particular time and a particular place and elevate it so that it is the way, the God-ordained way that you obey his law. That's what the IFB has done with, say, pants in the 21st century. They've taken a former application and made it a universal eternal law.
You're listening to episode 235 of the Postmodern Realities podcast, brought to you by the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. Today's guest is Matthew M. Kennedy. He has written an online exclusive feature article for our journal. His article is called, Does the Bible Teach Clothes Are Dictated by Gender, Cross-Dressing, and the Gender Binary? You can read Matt's article for free at our website, equip.org. And we would like to invite you to help other people find our content. So the best way you can do that is simply to tell a friend about this podcast and share this episode on your social media accounts. In addition, the best way to help other people find our content that you might not know is to go ahead and give us a rating and review, best done on Apple Podcasts, either a starred review, which can be done just quickly in seconds, or if you have a moment, think of one or two short sentences why you think people should listen to this podcast and post your review there at Apple Podcasts. Also, you can support us by giving us a tip for our content. That can be done at our website, equip.org. If you go to magazine at the drop-down menu, you'll see Postmodern Realities Podcast. Please click on that. And at any landing page, you will find a link where you could give us a tip, something like $3 or $5 or $10, something like that, that helps us to continue to bring you all of this content that is for free. In addition, we'd invite you to subscribe to our journal for $33.50. And with that subscription, not only do you get the print edition, but you also get all these online exclusive articles, like the one that we're giving you to give you a taste of our content, which is this one by Matt. So thank you for all of your support.
So we're talking about specific Bible passages, and I want to ask you about a few more of them, because it seems to me those also talk very specifically about mainly what women should be wearing in more detail. For example, 1 Corinthians 11, that talks about head coverings. And also, I think, quoted among those people that would say that women shouldn't wear pants is 1 Peter 3:3, which I will read, which says, do not let your adorning be external, the braiding of hair and the putting on of gold jewelry or the clothing you wear. So in other words, that it would be calling attention to yourself to wear jewelry or fixing up your hair, for example.
Yeah, okay. So in 1 Corinthians 11, what seems to be going on there, and we can't be completely sure, is that women in particular, and maybe some men, are taking some of the cultural symbols that signify a wife's submission to her husband, and in this case, probably head covering, and doing away with them, and in a kind of rebellious or defiant way. And so Paul is defending that kind of transcendent principle with regard to how husbands and wives relate to one another by defending also the use of this particular cultural symbol. So he's saying, you know, yes, you must cover your head because in this time and place, it signifies this particular transcendent principle. But he's not saying, I don't think, and in my article, I cite Wayne Grudem and some others who point this out. He's not necessarily saying that head coverings in themselves are God's ordained symbol of wifely submission or anything like that. He's simply defending the particular way in a certain culture that a transcendent truth is applied and saying, don't throw that over on purpose. And so even if you do think, and there are some who do believe that 1 Corinthians 11 does teach that women should cover their heads in worship, and I'm not going to, that you know, that's fine. Even if you think that, though, that doesn't then give you license to say, and women shouldn't wear pants, or and women shouldn't wear, you know, this or that. The church doesn't have the authority to go beyond what the scriptures say in binding the conscience. Paul the apostle has the authority to say women should wear this or not, but we don't. So if you want to be one of those who interpret 1 Corinthians 11 as dealing with a specific article of clothing for all times and places, again, that's fine, but that does not necessarily mean you can go on and specify other articles of clothing that are also forbidden, because Paul doesn't. When we're talking about 1 Peter 3, I'm always mystified when that text is appealed to. I'll read it again. Do not let your adorning be external, the braiding of hair and the putting on of gold jewelry, or the clothing you wear. And so if you take that text and say, okay, well, this means we can't braid our hair as women and we can't put on gold jewelry, you would also logically have to say we can't wear clothing either, because that's, if you're interpreting the text that way, that's part of the adorning that you shouldn't have. But really what Peter's saying is don't let the external things like the braiding of your hair or the putting on of gold jewelry or the clothing you wear, don't depend on that for your beauty. And he goes on to say, let your adorning be the hidden person of the heart with the imperishable beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is in God's sight is very precious. So it's not don't wear clothes, don't wear jewelry, don't braid your hair. It's don't think of these things as the source of your beauty. Think of God as the source of your beauty and your love for him.
Well, also in your article is the term gender binary. And, you know, I think there are people, as I mentioned in my intro, that would say that that term has changed over time. And it's different from specifically in the West, how we understand gender today. So it's not just two genders. You know, people have heard the term transgender of, you know, people who do not identify with the specific biological anatomy in which they were assigned at birth, of which they were born with, or they would say that people are gender fluid. There's no such thing as two genders because your gender identity can change over time. It can change from day to day. You know, and so there's other different terms that people in culture would use now. So I guess the question is, you know, what was the gender binary in creation in terms of what the Bible says, because that's what we want to go to. That's why we talked about these passages. What does the Bible say about these issues and what kind of clothing that Christians could wear? And so how is that expressed in Genesis 1 and 2, all the way back to the beginning?
Yeah, I mean, it's very clear. God created man in his image, male and female, he created them. And the idea there is that both the male and the female are constitutive of his image. We both equally bear God's image. And that male-female difference is not, that identity is not something that Adam looked within himself or Eve looked within herself to discover. They didn't go on some kind of journey of self-discovery to figure out, well, what am I? That was tied to their physical bodies. Adam is a man because of how God has formed his body. And so Eve is a woman because of the way God formed her body. And we know that's true because subsequent to that, he commands them to, you know, multiply and fill the earth. So clearly their male and femaleness is tied to their physicality as well. And that's very, very different. And you were mentioning this, it's very, very different from the way the Western modern person conceives of his or her gender. Now we're encouraged to look within. What do you feel like? Do you think you're a woman? Do you think you're a man? Do you think you're something else? Who are you attracted to? Do you want to be with another man? Do you want to be with another woman? Do you want to be with lots of different types of people? Does it matter to you? That then, once you discover that, you map that on to the gender spectrum, which is a modern creation. And it ranges from, you know, very, very masculine male to very, very feminine female and everything in between. And you find out where you are on that spectrum, and your body has nothing to do with it. It does not matter. In fact, if your body gets in the way, you change it. You mutilate it. You become, if you're a male, you can cut off your genitals and become a female. If you're female, you can have some kind of surgical procedure as well. Your body is an obstacle to your gender in many cases. Whereas in creation, your body is the given. It's what tells you who you are. And there's only two who's. There's a male and a female.
So just thinking about that in terms of Genesis 1 and 2, that God created male and female, like you said, and that's tied to their physical bodies. So, you know, how the Bible would describe gender, as you just said, is different than how our culture would see it. It seems to me that how clothing is reflected for men and women in different ways in different cultures changes over time. In other words, we could say, well, men don't wear skirts, but, you know, Scottish men wear kilts, which is a kind of skirt, and we don't seem that that's askance. That seems like something that's part of their culture. So, you know, and for instance, also in other like Polynesian cultures, whether it's in Hawaii or Fiji or things like that, men wear a type of skirt that's just what all the men wear, and that's part of their culture. So, given those kind of cultural things, and you were talking a little bit about cultural norms in the past, it seems like this, you know, admonition Deuteronomy is rather harsh, and it doesn't give us room to take into how a particular culture in their space and time and in their context stresses, because it's using the word that this would be an abomination. But if we all lived in Fiji, men would be wearing these, like, you know, skirts that they kind of wear. They're kind of long. They go all the way down to their ankles.
Right. No, I think that Deuteronomy 22:5 is, as I mentioned earlier, is purposefully vague on application. It just says, again, a woman should not wear a man's garment, nor shall a man put on a woman's cloak. And so that allows that principle to be applied in different places. So I think within the Fijian culture, a man wearing the skirt, no one would think that he's dressing like a woman, at least in that culture. A Westerner might come in and say, why is that man wearing a skirt? But within that culture, that's a masculine form of dress. And so that Fijian is perfectly aligned with Deuteronomy 22:5. And so is the Scotsman who's wearing his kilt. That's not a problem. That's within Scots culture, that's a male masculine form of dress. As to the question of why, you know, it is a really harsh word here. For whoever transgresses this principle is an abomination to the Lord. And I think that takes us back again to Genesis 2, where you do, 1 and 2, where God creates male and female in his image. And so any purposeful blurring of the lines, any attempt to obscure the distinction and difference that God has created in our bodies between male and female is also an obscuration of God's image. It's an assault on God's image. And then secondly, you know, in Genesis chapter 2, God, after he creates the woman from the man's body and then brings them together so that the woman is both Adam's body and his bride, he says, for this reason, a man shall leave his father and mother and cling to his wife, and they shall become one flesh. Jesus, in Matthew 19, looks back to that very text and says, this text is regulative for all marriage. This is what God did there was marriage, and that applies equally to all marriages. And then Paul in Ephesians 5, verses 31 through 33, says, quotes the very same text and says, And that joining of the man and the woman that God did in Genesis 2 is, it refers, he says, to Christ and his church. This is a great mystery, he says, but it refers to Christ and his church. So God created male and female and joined them in marriage because he was telling a story. He was telling a parable, a living in flesh parable about the gospel, about Christ and his church. And so to, again, on the one hand, obscuring the male-female binary is also to obscure the image of God. And on the other hand, to obscure the male-female binary is also to obscure the gospel, the story of Christ's love for his church and the church's love and respect and submission to Christ. So I think that's why you have the abomination language, because it touches on essentials. It touches on truths that if they're departed from, can lead a person into the darkness and away from the light.
But don't you think that culture can change over time and its context? So in specifically later in your article, you're talking about recent fashion trends, specifically for men. That's what you're addressing particularly in terms of, you know, one article that you note is, you know, how the pandemic has really kind of rewritten how people should dress, even men, so that men could be wearing skirts now. And again, it's not a situation of drag where, you know, heterosexual men would be wearing skirts and heels to work. I mean, there are people who do that. And they're married and they're dads and they have kids and all this kind of things. And also just men being able to wear makeup as well as women. So why do those things, it seems like, are they defined by gender? Is that like saying, well, colors have a gender, you know, all boys should like blue and girls should like pink kind of thing? Because can't clothing, you know, like if there are quilt, you know, kilts and for Scotsmen, can't we sort of evolve in that way in our own culture where it's acceptable for men to wear skirts and heels? And, you know, and how should Christians think about that when they see it? Again, we're not speaking about drag or anything like that. Like somebody seriously wanting to wear skirts and heels to the office.
I do think that clothing and culture does evolve. That's absolutely correct. So for example, you know, I think World War II, when many of the men were off fighting and women had to take their places in factories and in the fields, and they began to wear overalls, trousers, and more commonly than they did before. And that became, the trouser became disassociated with masculinity and just became kind of a neutral article of clothing. That was kind of a natural transition. And so, sure, the Christian is free to adopt those things as they happen. That's not a problem. But, you know, if you read the articles that I cite in my article, that's not what's going on there. When these men, and I know they're not identifying as women, they're identifying as men. When these men put on the slim fitting skirts and the high heeled shoes and they put on the makeup, they're purposefully transgressing. In every single one of these articles, they say, we are purposely subverting, transgressing the gender binary. They're setting out to obscure the differences between male and female. And I don't think a Christian can do that, because again, I think that is a direct violation of Deuteronomy 22:5. And the purpose for which this fashion trend has been created and is being promulgated is in keeping with that gender spectrum that I spoke about a minute ago. It's to promote the view of gender as not a binary at all, but just as massive variations not defined in any way by just masculine, feminine. So the Christian, I don't think anybody should, but the Christian especially shouldn't set out purposefully to undercut what a given culture has established as a masculine form of dress or a feminine form of dress. Again, you can adopt things as they just naturally change for functional purposes, but the act of subversion or transgression is something I think that Deuteronomy 22:5 explicitly forbids. And what's at stake here is the gospel, of course. Again, because male and femaleness is constitutive of God's image, and because we are made male and female so that we could be joined in marriage and that marriage would reflect Christ and his church, that's why it matters. That's why subverting the way of given culture reflects male and female is also an assault on God's image and is a subversion of the gospel.
Well, I know that some activists in the LGBTQ community do believe that people should be disruptive about these things, and especially as it concerns gender. And so to kind of try to move some of the norms that we were just talking about, and as the Bible explains them. And I know that in several articles that you've done for us, you've talked about the gospel of self and how it's really become the preeminent way in which Americans kind of pursue their lives and their happiness. And that's really bled into the church. And so what does that say about specifically this topic, and particularly as you were talking about men trying to subvert kind of cultural norms to dress as women, mainly because it subverts what the Bible is teaching, is what you're talking about. And it seems to me that a lot of Christians do think that what is their biggest goal for their kids? Well, I want them to be happy. So that's the main thing, that we want to, you know, everything in our lives should be about trying to pursue our own happiness. So how does that kind of figure into this particular issue?
Yeah, I mean, the gospel of self is basically you look within, you go on a journey of self-discovery, you find out who you are based on your likes, your dislikes, your desires, your passions, and that's all defined within. And then you come out. This could be in a sexual way or any other way, really. It doesn't matter. But the key is you, once you know who you are, then to be happy, you have to express yourself in some way. So of course we see this in the LGBTQ movement, but you can also see, I think, in the wearing of makeup by men and tight fitting skirts by men. This is who I am. So to be happy, I've got to express it. And if you object to me doing that, you are trying to impose some kind of external limit on my happiness and on myself. It's an act of hatred. It's an act of intolerance. And so that's why when you might hear objections to people who have adopted the gospel of self and who come out as this or that, when anyone objects to that person's claim and says, well, you shouldn't do this, or you shouldn't be that, or you should, whatever, is an act of oppression. It seems like an act of oppression. That's because the gospel of self has been embraced. And you see it again in both the secular world and increasingly in the church. And that's contrary to the real, true gospel. Our identity is not something that we determine. It's something that's given to us by God. God has made us male and female. We don't look within to find that. We can look in the mirror and discover that generally. I know there are some very small minority cases, but almost uniformly, you can discover that by looking in the mirror. And the whole point of the gospel is that you and I and everybody else have, by our attempt to say to God, I am going to be me. I'm going to live autonomously from you, and I'm going to define for myself what is good and what is evil. That has so separated us from God that it has led to death. And for those who don't repent, it will lead to damnation. And so God has sent his son to take on our flesh as a male, as one of those binaries, and to live a life of perfect righteousness and obedience to his father, to die on the cross, having taken our sin upon himself, our rebellion upon himself, and done away with it by his death, and then rose from the dead again in his body as a male, as a man, so that everyone who bends the knee and submits and surrenders and turns to him can be forgiven of their sins. But what that involves is you saying, okay, I'm not going to define me. I'm not going to say to God, I will decide for myself who I am and what is good and what is evil. I'm going to completely give myself over to you and receive your forgiveness and receive the grace you give me in Jesus Christ. And now, by your grace and help, attempt to live in accordance with the law that you've given me, with the body that you've given me, with all of the givens in my life I'm going to submit to rather than rejecting and rebelling against.
But what would you say to the person who would say that some of those particular teachings, especially from those, you know, fundamentalist Baptist groups and Pentecostal groups, that, you know, was damaging to that person. They would say, you know, my truth is this experience happened to me, and people were twisting scripture and they were trying to specifically, you know, put me down, maybe women, and try to, you know, dictate to me what I should wear or shouldn't wear, what was appropriate. And so my truth is different than that because I've experienced this, you know, twisted scripture that's really been damaging.
Yeah. So I do think that especially within fundamentalist contexts, that it can be intellectually stifling. In some cases, it can be pastorally abusive. And certainly people come out of those places sometimes, not always, but sometimes with a lot of processing to do. What I think you don't want to do, though, and what I always probably tell someone coming out of that context is you don't want to overreact. Overreaction can lead to just as much harm in the opposite direction as you experienced in the context from which you're emerging. So the key is don't overreact. You have been taught error, but the best thing for error is truth. So study the scriptures, compare that to what you've been taught, throw out what doesn't conform to the scriptures, but what does receive. The whole language of my truth, I think, is problematic because classically what the Christian does is not talk about my truth, but it's to talk about the truth. And the truth is not something that I determine or decide. It's something that is revealed to us, and actually it's a person who is revealed to us, and that's Jesus. And Jesus isn't defined by our desires or what we would have him be or what we would prefer for him to do. He reveals himself to us in the scriptures. And he, being the man, the representative human, should be the, or it is, the one to whom we're all being conformed. So I would also advise someone coming out of that situation using that kind of language to drop the my truth idea and start thinking about the truth, to be conformed rather than seek to conform everything to the self.
Well, finally, on a much lighter note, I have some fun rapid fire questions for Matt. So Matt, how do you like your steak cooked?
Rare, bloody, and more blood coming out of it than usual.
What is your favorite genre of music that you like to listen to?
I like, okay, this made me kind of nerdy here. I like choral music, like 16th century, 17th century choral music.
Like madrigal?
Yeah, I love that stuff, yeah.
Back to like the Shakespearean time period.
I love that. I write sermons when I'm listening to that. It's great.
So knowing what you know now, what advice would you give to your 18-year-old self?
Stop drinking, quit smoking, believe in Jesus.
And if you didn't have to sleep, what would you do with that extra time?
Oh, I would read more. I have so many books to read. I keep buying more too. I just have stacks of books here that need to be read. So I would tell myself to read. I would read.
Well, thanks, Matt, for being a guest on the Postmodern Realities podcast.
It's been great to be with you.
You've been listening to episode 235 of the Postmodern Realities podcast from the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. Today's guest has been the Reverend Matthew M. Kennedy, who has written an online exclusive feature article for our journal. His article again is called, Does the Bible Teach Clothes Are Dictated by Gender? Cross-Dressing and the Gender Binary. You can read his article for free at our website, equip.org. We'd like to connect to you, so please subscribe to the Bible Answer Man YouTube channel and join in the conversation in the comment section and in the live chat when we have premiere videos. Please follow the Bible Answer Man page on Facebook and on Twitter. You will find us at Hank Hanegraaff, Bible Answer Man, Christian Research Institute, and Christian Research Journal, as well as on Instagram at the Bible Answer Man account. You won't want to miss every Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern when we live stream the Bible Answer Man broadcast, hosted by CRI President Hank Hanegraaff at our website, equip.org. In addition, please subscribe to the Hank Unplugged podcast. Hank gets out of the studio and into his study and engages in in-depth, free-flowing, essential Christian conversations on critical issues with some of the most interesting, informative, and inspirational people on the planet. You'll want to head on over to equip.org because there you're going to find thousands of free resources for you in articles and past broadcasts, our podcasts, and videos. And thank you for all the ways in which you partner with the Christian Research Institute.